members of the public who are joining us, and I'd just like to start by acknowledging that the town of Bathurst was founded upon the lands of the Wadjuk-Noongar people, and to say that we pay our respect to their elders and that we honour the Noongar people of this land. So for the people who haven't attended before, the purpose of the briefing session is for councillors to ask questions of the staff to seek clarification on the issues that are on the agenda and decisions we made at next Tuesday's council meeting. There is an opportunity for members of the public to ask questions on items on the agenda. So if there's anybody who would like to ask a question at this point, you're welcome to come forward. I do need to bring your attention to the fact that our briefing sessions and our council meetings are recorded and that they are uploaded to the website. So questions that you ask will be included in that recording and made available to the public. Are there any questions from members of the public on items that are on the agenda? Okay, then we will move on. So attendances and apologies. So the CEO, Mr. Jarvis, is on annual leave until Tuesday the 3rd of April, I believe. And so we have Mr. Haggart, who is acting in his place for the duration. Are there any other apologies? Excellent. I don't believe there's anyone wishing to give a deputation this evening. Are there any declarations of interest in relation to items on tonight's agenda?
I'd like to declare an impartiality interest at item 6.9 in relation to passive development projects on the
Thank you.
With regards to deputations, sorry, but I'm speechless. I just wanted to, I did send an email to all the councillors, sort of make myself available. If any of the councillors would like me to clarify anything or answering questions, otherwise, I'm comfortable. If it's self-explanatory, let the speaking go mine and let you carry on with your business.
Kathy, were you wanting to ask something?
Oh, no, I can get an email. I thought you were doing a deputation, sorry.
Okay, let's just pause for a minute because Mr. King spoke to me beforehand and he's expressed his intention not to do a deputation, but I've obviously misunderstood because you were expecting me to check first. Hold on a moment, just let me. So, Kathy, are you saying you would like to have some clarification? Okay. I think there's probably opportunity after we've had tonight's briefing to have a conversation with you if that's necessary. So, if you're happy with that.
Probably tonight or some type of briefing the next week.
Either way, when I say after tonight, either after tonight's briefing or sometime in the next week.
Yeah. Oh, it's fine. Okay. I just made the assumption, so.
Okay, that's all right. Is everybody comfortable? Okay.
I have a possibly interest to 6.6, which is Broadway proposed for Shea Park.
Okay. Thank you. So you need to leave the room when we discuss that item, and you need to fill out the form that's in your drawer. Any other declarations of interest? Okay. So moving on to the reports that will be on the agenda for next week. So the first one is 6.1 is the application by 8 Napkins for outdoor dining. Does anyone have questions for the staff? Councillor Clinton?
Yes. I did briefly have a conversation with Brian Reid about this earlier, the possibility of expanding the space and what mechanism we could use for that. So I just wanted to explore that idea a little bit further.
The current application is taking the outdoor dining area to the extent of the private property. Councillor Quentin was advocating that council should encourage this person to actually extend that trading within the public thoroughfare, and I suggested at dinner that a footnote could be added next week encouraging the applicant to seek an old fresco dining permit to extend the dining area.
And if, and I asked if any risk would be assessed.
that process that needs to be, you know, satisfied with the condition of the furniture and the good for indemnity insurance in case there's any accidents.
Has
the
owner.
Can I just say to me, it's a change of such a small magnitude by adding a footnote that could be just moved off the next time.
Okay. Any other questions? I had a query in relation to, because this report as well refers to car parking, as have another quite on the agenda and others we've dealt with recently. And we had a very brief discussion when we were at inspections around car parking concessions. Is there an intention from the staff that when the LPS is reviewed to specifically address that car parking requirement?
Yeah, that can be certainly part of it, but actually the Basement Transport Study will look at reviewing car parking requirements generally through the town, so that's part of the task of that study.
It just seems that almost every application we're getting at the moment for determination is involving car park concessions, and if our scheme isn't matching up what we're delivering it. Any other questions? Councillor Hamilton? Only because this is a land use on private property that creates the demand for additional car parking spaces.
Good question. So the report limits the placement of the tables to the boundaries of the lot. No idea where the boundaries of the lot start. I do recall that the land has been dropped near the stairs. So
that item. Okay, moving on to 6.2. This is the site that we went to visit on the inspection, so the application for a Starlight's gym. Are there questions for the staff? Councillor Gangell?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. If I could just ask the planning staff, there was some discussion regarding the potential increase of hours in I think a couple of years, potentially a couple of years' time. As I view it, looking at the current hours, I don't see there being an issue with potentially just to avoid that necessity for application to move the current hours from across the board to expire at 11:30 p.m. At night, considering there's no business that use that area after traditional hours in any case. Can I just get a viewpoint on that?
Well, basically, you're correct. The businesses on the site expire approximately 5 p.m. Subway does have approval to operate until a little bit later, I believe 7 p.m. But you're correct that there's no other businesses that are using it. So it's cut off the other 12 other
blocks.
Okay. Councillor Hamilton?
I noticed in the report that the other tenants in that area were not consulted. Given there's only four tenants, I'm wondering if it may be worthwhile just letting them know the trading hours of this entity up, and only because it's better to actually have people aware rather than going back to something they aren't doing. So, probably a bit late in the game now to do that, but I'm just wondering why, just since there is such a small number of people to consult, why that didn't happen.
Basically, the reason for that was because the recommendation is for approval. In the town staff opinion, the car parking, which is provided on site, satisfactorily catered for the proposed use as well as the rest of the uses on the site. The application was picked up by one of the tenants on site. The applicant has spoken to, I believe, one of the other tenants, which has been provided as an attachment to the report there. But in short, it wasn't advertised because the position that the town is in, we consider that there is no parking, or there will be no parking issues on site moving forward.
And yeah, if they're going to expand I'm going to ponder it here because, you know, if there is an aspiration to expand those hours, it may be future conflict with parking.
Potentially. The application that was tabled to the town initially included only Monday to Sunday hours, predominantly past 4 p.m. If the business seeks to expand beyond what I believe to be reasonable operating hours in accordance with their class time tabling, that could be something that can be determined at a later date. We're really just looking at what they're proposing at this
point. Okay.
Yeah.
Councillor Wilson?
Probably the fact that I'm not as readily available, but I was just wondering, it was mentioned during the briefing, excursion group was on, that there was a concession for parking those already down there from that morning. Do we know how many bays they're exempted from?
To clarify that, and I spoke with the mayor briefly after that, that's slightly incorrect. In the 2006 approval, there were a number of bays that were approved on the site, approximately 100. In subsequent changes of use, the number of bays have been cut back. So rather than the tenant on site receiving a variation in their approval, it was a case of essentially changes of use, altering the parking configuration and reducing the bays to what it currently is.
So then taken across the whole site for all of the current uses of all of the shops there, what's the total number of bays that should be available on that site?
I couldn't tell you this time.
Have you taken one on that
site? Yeah.
Any more questions on this item? So item 6.3, Tim's just going to come and speak at the table so that he can hear your question. So this is the amended application for the convenience store. Any questions for Tim? Okay. Okay, moving on to the next item then, 6.4. This is the amended application for the concrete batching plant. Councillor Hamilton. Councillor Gantam.
Sorry, Your Worship. Just pedantic here. But are we in standing orders?
No.
We're not covered by standing orders.
We now have the guidelines for the briefing sessions. But you still need to behave yourself, Councillor Gant. So, anyway, back to the concrete batching plant. Councillor Brown.
Waste and dust, compliance with waste and dust regulations. Who enforces that?
The Department of Environment and Regulation, under the works approval that they issue for the site.
How do they go about that? Is it regular testing or self-policing? Or?
I've had discussions with them, but I don't think they police it. I think there's a certain level that they say this is the regulations you have to, and then upon complaints for the regulator, I don't think they're very, I guess, proactive in regulating. But it is, in essence, it's a state government thing as opposed to a local government.
Okay, so with no regime of testing, it is action upon receiving complaint.
Yeah.
So somebody receiving dust from complaint, they go on to. That was the major discussions previously. One of the major concerns was dust from the plant floating over Ashfield on the under the sea breeze. Thank
you.
So after the very expensive exercise that our neighbours in Bayswater went through,
yeah.
It seems to me that the lesson from that story is that councils don't want concrete batching plants. They need to amend their schemes to specifically prevent them being concrete batching plants.
Okay.
That's the situation we find ourselves in, is that this application would otherwise comply with the scheme.
Yeah. In terms of planning legislation, there's really no grounds to refuse that. Sadly.
But hypothetically, would it be possible for a council to amend their scheme in such a way that they could avoid having concrete batching plants?
You can go through the motion, but then the Western Australian Planning Commission obviously needs to approve the scheme amendment, and I question whether they actually would, because it's guided by the Department of Environment Regulation, the existence guidelines and everything like that. And if you can't have concrete batching plant,
I think Bayswater's argument should be defined as a noxious industry, which is not what they do in general industry, so we've accepted this. I'm trying to be in general industry.
Councillor Quinton.
Their amendments seem pretty innocuous. What do you
They obviously got their first approval through the SAP process, and then they put in another amendment last year to add some silos for storage. I think I bought this last year, and then we've obviously got this one. And they're claiming it's because the supplier doesn't supply the concrete batching plant equipment that was initially approved. The number of amendments we've received, I question whether they weren't happy with the conditions that we imposed. We were actually quite successful in getting conditions that caps the daily average and the daily maximum. We're able to pay for the alarm successful in that respect. And when we went to the SAT, they contested all those conditions, but for every single condition that they contested, the tribunal ruled in our favour. And so I do question whether with this amendment that they're using as an opportunity to bring triggers their rights to the SAT.
Can that happen at
the
SAT then? That they can ask for any other approvals to be challenged? Aside from these ones?
So they would have the ability to appeal the conditions he wants. But I think SAT could obviously look back on that. And a lot of that problem was that they never provided justification for a higher amount, because it's obviously set back at 420 metres instead of the, I think it was 300 to 500 within the guidelines. And they never provided the detailed information that a higher level of output could actually work within those distances. And that was one of their reasons for dismissing all of their objections. And they still haven't provided it. So.
And I must say, it seems to me that most of the conditions have been subject to challenge by the SAT, and the SAT has found in the favour of Tony, in favour of the Tony, so that would be a precedent. So I cannot see, you know, a SAT meeting kind of throwing that determination out and agreeing to modify the conditions should there be an appeal, and we don't know the difficulty.
So can I just clarify? So with the officer recommendation at the moment and the conditions that are listed there, they are the same conditions as what the SAT has previously approved.
I think I've tidied up the wording a few, but they're just minor wording changes.
So why was it necessary to include those conditions again?
I think it's because we have new council, obviously. I know you're very... but I think it was basically to inform council because it's a new application, as opposed to just going in accordance with the approval issued that day. It's just to put it right for transparency, I guess.
Does it, by including it and it being approved again now, does that give it any more weight to be questioned by SAT as a new decision of council?
No, I think I don't.
Any other questions?
Oh, no, I'm just thinking.
Is it done less consistent than the previous
Okay,
thank you.
All right, thanks.
6.5, this is the North Road on-street parking that Mr King was referring to. So, as you would all be aware, Mr King sent us an email this afternoon clarifying, from his point of view, the situation on North Road. Has anyone got any questions? I have a question around, after having had a conversation with Mr. King, it seems like the initial, when this was initially brought to staff's attention, it was around the fact that particular area of North Road does not have parking bays marked. Whereas my understanding is that generally around that area and the other locations, there are parking bays marked, and that the concern that triggered the contact with the town was that it created some confusion that there weren't parking bays marked in that particular location. It seems from my reading of the report that the staff have gone and looked at the site and determined that potentially having cars parked on both sides of the street when there are events on is not,
that's good.
Is not safe, is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, yes. The town did receive Mr King's letter, and the staff went out on site and met Mr King to discuss his concerns. Mm-hmm. And they've gone away and analysed the situation in regards to what potentially be the best outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily providing parking bays, but restricting parking from the corner so that it would prevent vehicles from parking there. And so that's what we've come back to, because that's a proposal that's been presented back to council.
So can you just explain to me a little bit more? So obviously the initial suggestion was to have the parking bays marked on the road, and what was the reason why that wasn't supported by the staff?
Because there's a limited space within that area of the road, and that was the reason why parking bays weren't suggested, formal parking bays were suggested.
Space is in the length of that?
The width of the road. As vehicles are coming around the intersection, there's a lack of width. So it was proposed to restrict parking in that section and to manage it on a permanent basis instead of on a...
So the concern is that if cars do park there as they currently are, that it's
Well, I mean, obviously it's been like that for a number of years.
Yeah.
so it hasn't, you know, we've not had any accidents there, but Mr. King has brought it to it to the town's attention, and so we've come to try to identify a potential solution to that, his concern.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I'm not sure that Mr. King's concern was about not being safe.
No, exactly. His concern was about the parking issues and that was...
About not being clear. Yeah, I'm still not clear, though, now that the staff have gone and looked at that site specifically, and you've mentioned the width of the road in that area, are you saying that if there are cars parking on that side of the road, that the staff now become aware that it's not an appropriate width for that to be...
Yes, and there's a limitation in regards to sight lines.
No, not at the moment, Mr. King. You've got to... This is a formal meeting. We'll speak to you about it afterwards. It's okay.
Has any consideration been given to having parking on just the east side of the road? Is there enough room for that?
We could go away and look at it again, but I mean, the idea was that we were attempting to resolve the issue of the sightline issues around that intersection, and so that's why we've come to council with this proposal.
I understand that section of the road hasn't been done. There's a height variation in this foliage and lines of sight where the shooting cars turn, but it seems to me that perhaps on the east side of the road,
I'd have to go away and look at that, whether it's possible, because if you're putting parking bays on that side, that means potentially pushing vehicles over onto the other side of the road where people are coming around a corner. So that could cause an issue for drivers.
That's all
right. What can't we restrict parking totally on that section of road? We're looking for the convenience of the football using public, so they don't have to walk as far. But it is a main thoroughfare, and the main thoroughfare is linking off very good today. Why can't we just put no parking signs up and enforce that for that section of road?
So the attachment to the agenda item illustrates a proposal in regards to the line mark. Sorry, I've lost my agenda item just as we got to that point. It's an electronic copy, so I'm trying to find it. And unfortunately,
6.5.
Sorry?
6.5.
Yes, I know, but when I go to do a search, it takes it chunks away, so it's not coming up. So, and
I'm sorry, 6.4.
I'm looking at both sides of the road.
Yes.
You got it, Jerry?
Number 6, yeah.
Oh,
thank you very much. Yes, so attachment number 5, does... Oh, okay.
We're talking about that red line indicates parking restrictions.
Yes, that's right.
Western side of the road?
Yes, that's correct.
There's no parking restriction on the other side of the road?
No, that's correct.
No. Why don't we just restrict parking totally on that section indicated in red? No transfers of problem elsewhere. We're talking about the reasons for it. To allow people a reasonable walking distance to the oval, rather than considering the needs and concerns of our resident ratepayers. Why don't we restrict parking on both sides of the road for that section?
If that was council's determination, that's fine. We were just making a proposal that would address the immediate issue. So if there was concern about ongoing parking from events in that area, we haven't received any other concerns apart from the most recent.
I've been down there, and it's like you've got to be very, very cautious, and there is the potential for conflict between pedestrians, cars, and cars to cars. I can't see the sense in allowing parking in that particular section of the road, given the variance of height and the bends. And I said, all it is, we're only using the bends for the convenience of people walking to the oval. They could park 2.5 parking elsewhere. I realise there's a transference of the problem if we do that. But that's, in my mind, that major thoroughfare isn't appropriate, that section of major thoroughfare isn't an appropriate place to park, either side of the problem. But that's just an opinion. Thank you.
Any other questions? Councillor Quinton?
I'm really glad this has come up. I nearly did have an accident at this intersection coming off the road up North Road. A car had gone around a parked car, and as it had, it went on the other side of the road, and I was coming up North Road, and I had to go up onto the site on the bridge, and nearly did that. It is very dangerous. It is something that I brought up at the Land Corp Development meeting to have this fixed. I'm actually really glad that it's come up. I wanted to ask why we are just going ahead with the suggestion of changing the parking, why we are asking for a consultation period with the residents.
Because it does impact the people who live adjacent to the area, so it's restricting potentially. Proposes to restrict parking on the verge adjacent to their property, not on their verge, but on the road, and so it does impact them for any guests that may perhaps come and visit. That's the reason. So, and generally, we consult with residents.
Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if the confused because basically. Just confused because whenever the football's on, people are parked, particularly on the eastern side all the way out, and I've taken photos of that.
Okay.
You know. The other side, not so much. When they're parked on both sides, it's actually impossible to you narrow it down to one lane of traffic. So I don't really understand why the officers have come back with just a report to put no parking on one side. Because I don't think that addresses the issue. But,
okay.
I mean, obviously, officers would possibly, I don't know where you need to look at it, perhaps you look at it on a day where it's not got such heavy parking after the events.
Sorry, I'm just looking to see
where you land.
Mm.
There are variations, you know, there are some times when you drive down that street that not entirely sure that residents park in that street that much. I mean, most of them have fairly large land plots and I'm not entirely sure that they park on the street. It seems to me that the parking on the street comes from the big events.
Just to answer your question, when did the site inspection occur? It appears from my records, and I'd have to check with the person at the time. Who was acting. The meeting was in mid to late November of 2017. And to answer your question, why is it only on one side? Well, the assessment was to do with the sightline issues and to create opportunities for vehicles to safely traverse around that particular area. So the council wished to restrict parking on both sides. We can go out and consult in that way, so it's up to council. So.
Any further? Alright, moving on to 6.6, Broadway.
This is what I have to leave.
Yes.
Okay.
Councillor Gangell, this is the proposed principal shared park.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Just have a question on this one. Just under financial considerations, I note that it states the cost of concept and drawings, the PTA will cover that. But ongoing maintenance shall be the asset of the town. Just construction-wise, is that also the town, or does that come under the concept part of it?
Through the chair, I had a conversation with the department yesterday, just to clarify. So at this stage, they're looking at providing funding for the concept proposal only. They said if it went to and the detailed design process, and if it went to construction, they would potentially be asking council whether they were prepared to make a contribution towards that. but at this stage it's very early stages.
Okay. The third question, I suppose it could be a little bit early, and I do know it's likely to come back. I don't know why it didn't wait till April anyway, because I think it's somewhere here actually it's coming back in April in any case. When the report comes back, we have some estimation provided about the likely cost to council for construction.
Yes, we could ask. We could ask for order of magnitude of costs.
Thank you.
I've got a question around just this whole project. It seems to be a short section of path that doesn't go anywhere. Do you have any information around why they've chosen this little section to?
Yes, I sought that clarification in yesterday as well, because it's. And I said, you know, they've got a copy of our bike plan, and they do. He said that they've actually done some analysis of people using the train station, and he advised that this section is a key component to improving access to the train station. And so I said, well, linkage, how are you providing linkage to the principal shared path coming down from Collier Road, which services the Morley area? And he said they haven't looked at that, it's too early at this stage. At this stage, they're just asking council whether they've got in-principle support for this, and then they'll look at the other connection issues. Because I didn't know whether they were looking at taking it further down the Broadway and connecting via Grey Street to Collier Road. I wasn't sure how they were going to provide this connection. So he said it's quite early in their design stage. I also had a conversation with him about, as you may recall, that the Director of Strategic Planning and myself attend a Pasadena station working group strategy. Yes, thank you. Thanks for that. And so that he is coordinating with that particular group as well, and has the support of that particular working group.
So just to clarify your point that you made earlier about the cost, so when I read the report in its current form, I took it to read that just the median island crossings and ramps were going to be at our expense. So you're saying since your conversation with them, they've clarified that. So does that mean the report needs to be adjusted, or am I misread what you're saying?
No, the idea is that they're going to be preparing they're looking for in-principle support from the town, and they're going to be preparing the concept plans at their cost.
I understand that, yep.
And should it go to construction phase, then potentially they might be asking us for a contribution.
I understand that. I just thought that I'd read in here something that was contrary to what you've just said. Any other questions? Okay. Item 6.7. Oh, sorry, getting half back. So 6.7 is the Bike Boulevard Whipsfield Street consultation. So I've got a question about this project. So obviously there's been two phases so far, and my understanding is they've both been 50-50 funding, is that correct, between the town and...
Sorry, which item are we on?
Bike Boulevard, Whipsfield Street.
Whipsfield Street.
St. Patrick Street. So the funding up until now has been 50-50, yeah? So the design and the consultation side. Do we have any indication about potential costings for this project if it was to be delivered, and what funding models we'd expect?
Yes, we do, but I don't have that information here. I can provide that to you afterwards.
That would be very helpful.
Yes. So I think only order of magnitude of cost at this stage, because it depends on what we want to try and achieve.
Course.
So when we were just in the building, I noticed I bet down at the library, I moved into the intersection of the road. I got up to 6:30. Now I'm guessing that's also the busiest time of the day, but before we talked about it being 105 meters, that actually is what seemed to match up to me. Is there a requirement that the cul-de-sac will be part of this project, or
is there a requirement that the cul-de-sac
be a requirement that the cul-de-sac will be part of this project, or is that element of the design?
I suppose it's flexible because the report that's attached to the agenda indicates that the feedback that's been received from the community would be subject to a peer review. So they had provided some feedback saying that they were of the opinion that it was good in regards to slowing traffic and managing traffic speeds, because some residents have indicated that there's a traffic speed issue. So there's a benefit on that side. Obviously, they've indicated that in order to, for people who are wanting to get to the cul-de-sac end, they would have to drive around, so that's an inconvenience to those people. I suppose it's up to a peer review in regards to that's what's being proposed here, and then the designs would come back to council.
So I noticed the bike plan was in 2013.
Yes.
It's finalised. There's been a little bit of a change in the layout use of the town since that time. I'm just wondering if any of the assumptions that were built into that initial bike plan foresaw that there would be two active restaurants and a change in use of the shopping centre.
I think the idea of a bicycle boulevard is to increase pedestrian usage and access into the town. So I would say yes, that the overall objective was considered because it looked at trying to get people from Ashfield to come down Whitfield Street to access that area to the Bassendean Primary School onto the shopping centre. And potentially through to the train station. So I would suggest that it was considered.
So in the report, I think it's on page 12, it says that there would be a walkthrough with councillors offered in mid to late March. So that hasn't happened. I'm not sure what other councillors feel, but I know that there's a number that aren't necessarily as familiar with the plans that have been proposed as others. Is that something that the consultant has?
I missed a little bit.
So in the report it says that there was a walkthrough for councillors.
A walkthrough?
Yeah. That would be offered in mid to late March.
Yes. As in walkthrough with the design, look, we're probably a little bit later than what we were anticipating. So I can follow that up and find out what the timing would be.
Well, it depends if there's interest. I don't know if there's interest. I just noticed that it was there.
I can follow that up. If there's an interest.
Is there an interest from people?
Yes.
There is some interest.
So in the initial white plan in 2013, there's a map here. Talks about existing and proposed pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure. Would it be possible to get an update?
Which page are you
looking at? The right plan.
Is this the attachments?
No, this is what we're looking at.
The next
one. This is what attachments. Page 36 on the right plan. That's where we start.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it possible to get an update on which parts of that have been completed, which parts of it have not been completed since that one was first done?
The bicycle boulevard is probably the one of the major projects which we're initiating. I can give you an update, but basically it's one of the major ones which we're initiating. We haven't been successful in getting grant funding for all of them. Yes, can you update on that?
So, for example, here there's the proposed principal shared path run down along the river. Is that a project that ever eventuated?
Shared path?
The shared path. Well, that's the proposed route of it. Yes. No, that hasn't been. That hasn't been undertaken. There was a list of priorities of which priorities we should do, and I think Whitfield Street is one of the first priorities. And then
then I think Old Perth Road is another priority. Taken on board a little bit of feedback that we received from council in regards to the length of the contract previously. So it's been reduced from 3 to 5.
From 5 to 3?
3 to 5. 5 down to 3. Yeah.
Councillor Hamilton?
So you'd like to receive the specifications, or, I mean, the contract is quite a big document.
Okay.
So would you like to see the specifications, or?
I guess what I'm saying is that from a councillor's point of view, we get this advice and what have you, but remember there's variations in the contract, and those variations can significantly add to
this is a this particular contract is a fee for service, so
okay.
Yeah, so it's not like building a constructing a road, or and so therefore you might have a variation because it's a drainage pit which was not previously identified or something like that, and it was a wrong size the drainage pit, so you have to make a change to the design drawing, so then you go back and get a variation based on the fees that they provided to you, and so the contract generally has to provide justification in order to achieve that variation. With this particular contract, it's a fee-for-service, and so we've identified within that schedule of prices that, that you have in front of you what the cost is to provide that service, and it's generally quite unusual for a fee-for-service for us to have any variations, to be honest. Unless we, for example, may have forgotten to have included,
this wasn't clear to me when I read this.
Yeah, but look, I'm very happy to provide you the specifications if you like, please.
So if the contract's a fee-for-service arrangement, what benefit do we derive from locking our service into a single service provider for 3 years?
The administrative task in regards to calling tenders is quite lengthy and quite large. Evaluating all the tenders is quite a time-consuming process for all the staff involved. In this particular case, there's been 3 staff members who have been involved in that, including the director, who's undertaken the financial evaluation. So just that alone, there's been a big investment in regards to preparing the specifications, inviting tenders, getting the contractors to actually submit their prices, which cost them money as well at time, and then all of our staff time to prepare to evaluate the submissions. So in that regard, there's a huge administrative investment to have it for 3 years and going down lower than, say, a yearly contract. It'd just be, we would have so many contracts that would be coming before council, or that we would be then preparing. We would be doing nothing else but calling tenders, evaluating, and we wouldn't get a chance to actually get them to do much work.
But if hypothetically, for example, council was to pass a resolution asking me to put 3,000 hours into the kitchen, and that was a job that I would cost $3,000 to do, would this tender obligate us to only use this electrical
If this tender, say for example, we didn't, I'd have to look at the details of the tender, but if the tender had a list of all the fee for services, but it didn't include one particular element, we can go to this contractor and say, can you provide us with a cost to do that? And we can go, I think we'd have, I'd have to check the specification, we can go out to another contractor and ask him as well.
Yes, we can.
Yes.
I mean, if it was $5,000,
yes.
Yes, we would be choosing products. One of the things about going through you, if I may,
yep.
Chair, we got the prices in through the scheduler to make the receipt. So we know what the 3 years is.
I guess it's the same as locking in your interest rate. You're betting the prices aren't going to go up. They're hoping to.
The contract would allow for a certain.
I'm not sure, to be honest, but as far as breach of the purchasing policy within by the Act, as far as it's restricting the local businesses.
That wasn't my question. My question was, are any of these contracts?
May I check? Can you get back to me?
And
no, that was exactly the same. Still being considered?
We were asked to include it in a policy of some sort, given the City of Canning, from what I can remember.
Yeah, that's correct.
I think from what I read from the City of Canning, it was very much a sustainability one, rather than limiting the contract just to the town of Essendon. But I...
Well, the idea was not to limit contracts to town of Essendon.
No.
Provide weight to local businesses and to local people. So we're still waiting a response from the town to that notice of motion.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to find out whether any of the people that responded to the tender were the best way.
Yeah.
Using well the preferred providers to also in tandem advertise it on our Facebook and our website.
Oh, absolutely.
But we're not doing that at present.
This was on your Facebook page.
Yes.
So we're doing them in tandem?
We didn't go to Wellgut preferred providers, we used the general.
But at the moment, when we are going down the Wellgut preferred provider path, we're not also advertising it locally.
No, because it's what they call an e-quote system. Whereas Wellgut has already gone out to tender, and they said, here are the people that can do the work. and hear the type of work that people do.
Yeah. But I think I just heard you say, though, that there's no reason that we couldn't do both in
tandem. It's much easier to do one or the other, but there's no reason why we could do both.
Anything further?
So we can accept Walga for third tenders, but we can't give preference to local companies responding to tenders. Cost is not an issue?
Yeah. If you're in the regional area?
Yes. In the Congress. We can accept advice from Walga and say, look, these are preferred tenders.
Because they don't have to handle that.
Yeah.
Councillor Hamilton?
This is a general question in relation to business. Basically, I want to know whether you agree with me or not, but would it not be advantageous for the town if we put out our networking a lot further and scope a lot more businesses into providing quotes? Surely that will end up providing us with better outcomes, because the more people we have quoting,
I guess by putting out a general ad, we are putting it out to everybody. We're not restricting anybody.
But what I'm getting at is, if we actually expand the manner in which we advertise these things, like we go through social media,
yeah,
advertising, whatever, if we have a program where we expand the way in which we put the information out there in the public realm, it surely would be more advantageous to this town, because we would get better volumes of people quoting, and obviously that means we can't get their prices.
I guess in this case, I mean, we have 11 tenders. In the there was one where we had 32 tenders.
And I've also seen one where we only had 2 or 3.
Sure.
So, you know, I think generally the more information gets out there in the public realm, then generally the better it is. And obviously that gives us a great selection. So that's, you know, that's my question, that we would get a better outcome. Thank you.
So I guess what this is all about is us trading away our ability to shop around the local suppliers for a period of 3 years in exchange for not having to do as much paperwork when it comes to procuring electrical services. Is that the trade-off?
I'm not sure. If I may, I guess we're not restricting anybody submitting tenders, whether it's local or not.
Yeah, but the purpose of the tender,
yeah,
is to award a monopoly on electrical services to one company. In exchange for that, the town gets the legal claim that it doesn't have to search for a good price each time an electrical service
economics involved, yeah.
Because otherwise, what's the purpose?
Okay, 6.9, polling club. Yes, Councillor Gadgil.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Now, this one I did raise with yourself and the acting CEO. I do know that certainly the work is required. However, there's also additional funds that are looking for from the town. Do we know at this stage what is in the facilities report? Because I note that we're putting things up for the town to consider, and the council's never seen the facilities report. That's my first question. I do have other questions.
So the facilities report will be workshopped with the council on the 4th of April. In terms of what's in the report, officers wouldn't be preparing a report which is at odds to that report.
Just further to that, I'm just trying to follow the logic here, because in total, it's, I believe they're about roughly $60,000, the split, so from the grant and the town. So I don't understand then, if the grant is not accepted, and I'm assuming these works are somewhat urgent because of the hazard they present, why then would the council not consider allocating the additional funds to do the overall project that the grants apply for, but instead it says if the grant is not successful, then all we give the bowling club is $7,500 towards a water tank.
If we were to be proposing that the council would be funding the project, whether or not a grant is successful, it would hinder the capacity of the grant to be successful.
Oh, okay. Then, I'm just not too sure then why the consideration of the water tank hinges on whether or not the CSRFF application is successful or not.
I don't believe it is hinged on that.
Well, it says in point four, in the event that the CSRFF application is not successful, and you just say you don't believe it is hinged on that. Well, the wording in point four actually says that it is.
I think there's two projects that are mutually exclusive, so I'm not sure why.
Okay, and just finally, I'll propose this next week. I don't think point four is required at this stage, because I'll prefer to see the facilities report prior to allocating funds, because I think potentially the kitchen and stuff which is mentioned is probably a high priority for my thinking for the effort of the club.
Okay, nothing more? So 6.10, the budget review. Yep, Councillor Clinton.
Why were the transfers to reserve to Newton and Willows in 16.17 not done?
I'm not sure, but Learning College, please.
Sorry, what question? Why weren't the transfers?
Willows 16.17 income not previously transferred has now been transferred in 17.18.
Because when we finally do the final accounts in October, we then know whether, after the auditors have been, they do a financial statement at the end of June, and obviously, the end of June finished, so that happens in the next year. It's just time to do it.
Councillor Wilson?
So, one of the understatements in against budget that's listed in the papers there relates to the steam heating.
When I say the request, it's we're presenting to you a balanced budget and we advise you of all the adjustments that we've done to balance the budget.
And
we haven't done anything with the original budget at this point. It may be done after you consider the next.
So
this is all part of the workshop.
But so no delegated authority exists to reallocate underspending from particular projects to another.
No, as part of these financial statements every month, if there are budget amendments, we ask council to adopt by that. That's the only time we can do it. We have no delegated authority to change numbers. No, it's a council budget.
So you and I had a conversation last week sometime after we had the workshop on this item. And I was saying that, at least from my point of view, and I believe from other councillors' point of views as well, that maybe we need to have a look at a different way of presenting some of the information so that we're very clear on an ongoing basis when particular projects are over or under where they're expected to be, and so that when there is money that is available, so for example the steam meeting's a really good example, that decisions can be made about where that money could be reallocated. And I think you were agreeable to to that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Your Worship. Sorry, just while we're talking about expanded money and on spending and what have you, are we thinking that's going to be done by the end of the month?
Are you asking me this question?
Yes.
I'm not sure what question you're asking me, I'm sorry.
Don't worry, I'll ask you after the meeting. You jump my new
one. Okay. Any other questions on the budget review?
Make it clearer, if you like. It's probably, yes, it's buried under all those financial statements, if you like, and it may not appear to you as clear as it should be. So I wanted to include that as part of within the report rather than in the financial statements and say, hey, we're moving this money from here to here, are you okay with it? So it'll be in the report rather than in the financial statements. At the moment it's in the financial statements.
Result of that, we've got all of this extra
save money that we pay people in our notice to pay for that. Where's that extra money going?
So I'm not sure what you mean by taking money from the neighbours.
When we get income in, we
yeah.
do so by the rates.
Yes.
So we set aside a bucket of money to pay for Stanway. We set aside too much money because it didn't
Correct.
Cost nearly as much.
Correct.
That's right. But we still set that money aside.
Yep.
Where is it gone?
We needed that money to balance our budget.
Because
against
we...
what?
Because we underestimated.
Yeah, but what?
Which?
On all the accounts that we have within the budget.
And
this
is
matter came up at the workshop, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, but it seems that you're not quite picking up what we're putting out because for you to say it goes to balancing the budget, that's nice, but what we're not interested in whether the budget is balanced or not. We're interested in knowing where that overallocation of rates for Steamworthy has ended up.
We can't provide you with a budget that's not balanced for one. Number two, the money that we have set aside for Steamworthy helped us balance the budget. That's all I can say.
Okay. Well, that, you'll need to have a better answer.
You can.
Well, my neighbours expect to know where that money I set aside for Steamworthy ended up being spent instead.
So you're saying you want to know the specific projects that ended up costing more than what was originally budgeted, and so that the money was allocated to in order to meet those extra costs? Is that what you're asking for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know which hole it went to play. Was it because there was an overspend somewhere else? And
yes.
That place?
Yes.
Okay.
So we provided that to you at the workshop.
Yes.
That was provided. That was a list.
Yes.
What you were concerned from, correct me if I'm wrong, what you were concerned was that there was just a list of expenditure accounts and income accounts that didn't break it down into the departments. Is that correct?
I'm hearing two different things here. So one, the departments, my understanding was so that we had an overall understanding of which areas were on track for their expenditure, which ones weren't, to pick up some of those problems. But then this is a separate issue where I think it's clear that we're not feeling the way that it's communicated at the moment. It's clear enough to us. And so I'm not sure whether Jaya would satisfy you. One of the things that Mr. Costarella and I spoke about was making sure that on our monthly financial statements it was really clearly highlighted which projects were over budget, which ones were under budget, which ones were at risk. And so that then we could look at the funds that we were going to be needing to reallocating and be much more conscious of those decisions that were being made along the way. Would that kind of thing help?
Yeah, well, I guess what my concern is that decisions are being made at an office level without the appropriate scrutiny of councillors. And I appreciate that you put together large bundles of paper for the figures and asked us to approve on what all the decisions and assumptions are taken at the end. But what that prevents us from having an opportunity to make decisions amongst ourselves as to what we want to do with that money, because it's not the officer's money that's raised, it's council's money that's raised. And when those decisions get made, they should be raised. I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I don't think there is any expenditure council that's not been approved. What is proposed in the budget review is projects that have been identified as being requiring additional funding that was allocated in the budget and is requested of council to provide that allocation. And in order to counterbalance that, there are projects that have been identified as coming in under the anticipated amount. And so what Mr. Costarella is trying to say is that's what we're producing, is that a balanced budget review.
So we get that. We get all of that. What we're asking for is that you put in the budget that this price is going to cost $1 last year, but it ended up costing $2. So we just want a list of the things that ended up costing more.
We've got that list.
You provide that
Great.
List at the workshop.
Yeah. Great. Then all it needs to do is balance up against the things that we didn't spend. If we're looking for something clearer, I think that's all we're asking for.
Yeah.
But I think we did that.
Workshop.
This comes back to what I brought up, where we don't have much knowledge of what departments or what projects are actually blowing way out and sucking the money out from projects which are way under, coming under. So obviously there's a clarity thing happening here which we have brought to your attention previously. This is an issue, and I personally feel that I don't have enough information clearly made out to me that I can make good judgments. This is why I'm saying as a councillor that I see all these figures, but they are not so clear to me that I can see exactly where that money's going. And if there's delegated authority where you are taking a bundle of money from the steam wheeling and pushing it to a project that's blown way out, then we should be knowing which of those projects or departments are not functioning well.
Mr. Reid likes it.
It just seems to be acquired by a finance person with a major problem. We've got a $400,000 difference in the opening balance. From my perspective, it's not as if the money has been transferred to other projects. It's filled up that hole in the opening balance. And I would make the point that by the time we get to this late in the year, the practicalities of transferring that money to different projects that we can complete prior to the end of June.
Okay. Let's move on to 6.11. So this is a request for sponsorship. Okay, back on to 6.10 budget review.
Had the savings not been made in the steam leading budget, the same we would have had to put off projects next financial year. So coming under the semi, there's huge contentious issues, all sorts of problems there. So if it came out on budget or gone over, the point is, those savings hadn't been made for $70,000. What would be the implications for the ones?
I don't know whether or not.
We basically would have, looked at other projects and said, hey, we can't afford this, we need to defer.
And that would have been the budget.
From an opposite point.
And that would have been the review process. So the opening discrepancy of $400,000, how does that come about?
Okay, so when we do a budget, we, as officers, estimate what the opening surface. There was a thing called leave accruals that we underestimated as officers. And when the auditors came in, they said, oh no, they have to have a certain amount for annual leave, long service. And that created that additional amount of money.
So
related around the leave accruals.
So those additional money is going to have to be set aside and moved down to contingency accounts.
Yes, back out into.
Is that also the reason why there was a variation there on unexpected or unplanned leave for the month of $1,000?
Yes.
That was a subset of the $400,000.
Okay, happy to move on? 6.11, request for sponsorship.
When was the $200 figure set?
When we reviewed the policy last, which was last year.
And the $6,000 that is set aside, does an annual amount go into that fund?
Without $10,000 a year, that's the money. Well, we reduced it to six.
We
used that $10,000 reduced it to six.
And so, say if $4,000 gets used, then it just gets topped up by $4,000. Total of six each year, or is it
a new allocation?
Well, it's a new allocation of $6,000.
And that accumulates in funds?
So it becomes part of your opening balance.
So it's a zero based budgeting process.
Yeah, this question
has changed
the
year.
That's good.
It's a policy. You just have to do that.
Okay,
6.12.
Councillor Gant, this is the Design Basso. Committee?
Yes, thank you, Worship. So I didn't quite follow what the actual change that you're suggesting is. If you want to mind.
You're asking me? Yep.
Or is it not you that...
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
So unfortunately you weren't at the first meeting, so we talked about this with the committee members at the time. So at the moment the committee structure is as a formal committee of council under the Local Government Act, so it has to operate under standing orders with the agenda as per the normal structure with reports from the officers, and it's somewhat restrictive in terms of being able to get the people, the community representatives, to provide input. So this particular committee, Mr. Dowling has his projects already defined through the local planning strategy that we have already set for him. Not strategy, you know what I mean? What's the word? Local planning. You know what I mean. Look, all the work that he's doing. Anyway, so we've got a group of people in the community with expertise in all sorts of areas relevant to strategic planning. And the discussion was around how we could best utilise their expertise. And there was thought that as Mr. Dowling progresses through his projects, it would be good to be able to have these individuals have input into those documents that he's producing to guide them from the outset. And the model that we discussed was the one that City of Vincent's currently using for some of their advisory committees. So what this does is simplify the agenda for these meetings, so that it's not the requirement of the staff to produce lengthy reports. It's much more about saying, okay, I'm at the stage where I'm looking at the design guidelines, and then taking that to the advisory committee and getting those people to give input at an early stage, so that then the staff can take that away, and as they prepare the design guideline, they've already had some input, and then can bring it back and get feedback in the normal way and take it out to the community. So it was to allow the community representatives with expertise to be able to be more of a resource for Mr. Dowling, and to basically remove some of the restrictions that the structure that official committees of council places on community input for some of these committees.
Right. So then if I could just ask, and I don't have an issue with it, but I just want to make sure that we don't become a bureaucracy unknown to ourselves, where this isn't going to spur then additional working groups, additional...
No, so this committee's got a really defined, because Mr. Dowling has got the projects that he is working on, they're the things that would be coming to this committee for it to address.
Some assignments to cycleways and stuff.
Well, my understanding, please correct me if I'm wrong, but you were quite supportive of going down this path.
Yeah.
Are there any other?
Sorry, just if I could. So I know. So basically there won't be an agenda as such anymore for this?
Yeah, there's still an agenda, but it's very... it's a lot more brief, so
yeah.
It might be... So the next meeting, the intention is to discuss how we're going to consult with the community around all of the strategic planning work, but specifically around the density proposals and about the design guidelines for the town. So the agenda could be as simple as that, and then as documents are produced, Mr. Dowling will run the path to the committee for feedback. Is that how your understanding as well? Yep.
It's not as many phases, or it's just set by the dates.
So what we discussed at that first committee was that we've obviously got the dates that we have adopted for committees, but to make it work, Mr. Dowling would call meetings at key times in his project timelines when he needed input, when you know that would be beneficial for him moving forward, so that it wasn't delaying the process and then it could be flexible. So, for example, last night's workshop that we held and next Monday's, they were topics that were relevant to that committee, so those committee members are being invited to participate in those workshops. And then next Wednesday following them, we've got the next Design Basso committee scheduled, right, but sometime very soon, to then to receive input from those committee members to help guide moving forward. Does that make sense? Okay, everyone happy? 6.13, the electronic recordings policy. I've got a number of questions, but I've just got to pull up my thing if anyone else wants to ask me first. I still, so obviously this has come back to council, I think this might be the third time we've now talked about the recordings policy. My first question is around when we're going to get the actual equipment installed. So I know that Mr. Jarvis has got some quotes and what's that look for? So we don't know where that's at?
No, Mike asked me that question today in fact.
Now, the policy that we've been presented here in draft, I still think it might need some changes.
Sure.
Some of it seems to be quite inconsistent to me, and maybe you can clarify for me. So on the second page, it's talking about copies of meetings to be made available to the public and so on, and about them being available in the library. When this last came to council, one of the points was about removing obsolete phrases. And in my mind, some of these would be obsolete because if we're uploading things to the website, would we not be, even if people are going to the library, directing them to look at them on the website? Like I'm not sure what the intention is here about providing copies and, you know, within a certain number of days. And
yes, it is probably right. I did take a bit of guidance from the City of Geraldton, to be honest with you. And I thought that it still wanted people to go and listen to the recordings and the like.
That just doesn't make sense in my mind. I'm not sure.
So if people don't have the internet, they can go to the library and listen to it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. There was also in the resolution, it talked about how we were going to make people aware of the fact that they're being recorded. So, I might have a chat with you during the week. Okay. Anyway. Does anyone else have any questions on that item? Okay, 6.14, River Parks Committee. I have a comment to make about this. As someone that's not a member of this committee, I feel that the minutes of this are extremely complicated, and that's not a criticism of anyone. I understand that this was a long meeting with lots of interaction from different members of the community, but I really feel like the suggestion to, I think the officer recommendation is to have a workshop to talk about the points three onwards. I feel like I need background on the entire project, not just what's come out of this particular meeting, to be able to have any kind of informed decision making about these points. I'm not sure how other people feel. I know Melissa's on this committee and Councillor Brown. Is that something that Coterra would be able to?
Oh, that's something that Jeremy and myself would be able to assist with in that regard.
On the motion that the Paul Bridges moved, I don't see there being any voting on that motion. Do you know if that was?
The meeting was quite a long meeting.
Yeah.
And at that stage, the departments, biodiversity and the planning, and the Department of Planning, Daniel Lee left, that at 5:30, so this meeting on until
the next meeting starts.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So there was a vote on it, and all the as far as yes, yeah, there was a vote, and
recorded here. So
everybody supported it. So
okay.
All the committee representatives supported it. Yes.
So you'd say it was unanimous?
It was unanimous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's just so long.
Yes.
Which page? Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the
yeah.
I'm looking at the report, not at
yes,
the attachment. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just for the chair, the report is trying to provide a little bit of background knowledge
yeah.
as to where we've come from to get to this point. And because it was a bit of a change from the office's recommendation and the cost implication associated with those changes, I felt that perhaps it was in council's best interest to bring that report to this briefing session, so council had an opportunity to ask any questions and before it, because normally we just present the committee
yeah.
report straight to council.
Thank you, Worship. Just on what's been passed by the committee, my understanding is that the committee's asking council, and this is prior to doing any broad community consultation, is my understanding, so it's just the internal group at the moment that's seeing this, but even prior to doing broad community consultation, they're requesting $5,700 be spent on amending plans prior to going out for consultation, and I'm making the assumption that it could spend additional funds after that community consultation if funds are required. Or is that the $1,300 to modify? Well, point two, and then the $4,200 in point three. So I'm just trying to ascertain so that those costs to be spent prior to going out to broad consultation, is that what this recommendation is suggesting?
Yes, that is what that's recommending. Those changes were relatively minor to the concept, so the items from number three onwards had bigger financial implications, but those smaller changes were just things like amending the pathway alignment and removing the floating wetland from the design. But they were decided by the committee as not being needed, and also for the feedback received from Transit in Darien Park. And it's also feedback that officers agree with.
Oh, okay.
But the committee's recommendation includes all those extra points listed in number four, and so they haven't been included in the officer recommendation.
Oh,
so the committee's
okay.
recommendation and the officer recommendation
yes.
don't match.
So just so I can understand, just so I can see where we've gone through at the moment. So have we expended the $5,700 in making those changes or not as yet?
No.
Okay,
no.
Thank you.
Did you want to say something?
That in recommending or suggesting those changes, there was no price put on it at the committee level.
No.
So, it wasn't that people were saying we greatly this expenditure. It was more just to give a bit of context.
Yeah.
In fact, I would follow on and say that there was a desire not
yeah.
to, because many of the members in the committee said we don't want to spend more money. So I believe
I'm just a bit confused now, because all the points from three onwards that include other consideration to islands, consideration of settling pond, all of those things, they would all have additional expense.
Yeah, but essentially they've said go and consult with the three other main stakeholders prior to considering
the officers have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what the committee's recommendation is.
No.
So I'm confused, because you're saying the committee didn't want to spend money, but you're saying the committee recommended these things.
Okay. We had this argue-bargain with the motion went on for an hour.
I know, it went for a long time.
So basically, there was a whole heap of things put forward. There was an expression of, you know, if we go to the consultant with all these requests, it's going to cost more money.
Mm-hmm.
So then it was back a little bit. Is that what you would say now? Because we then modified it a bit. I remember that. So there were certain items that there was agreement on, and there are other items where the committee just wanted to ask the chair for their opinion and get an idea of that cost.
Yeah.
So I think when I read further down, there's responses there from co-chair saying, this would cost so much money.
Yeah.
They would suggest consulting with Department of Biodiversity and Conservation, Department of Water, before anything further.
Thank you.
But what I did want to ask was those concept plan changes in regards to the pathways and such that are going to require additional expenditure, because it's at the concept level, is that necessary at that point? Could it just be noted and not go to consultation and then all the changes be made at once? Or
some of them could be, the pathways and that could be left for the detail.
Yeah.
However, the figures that have been run through the undue modelling incorporate the floating wetland. Therefore, if it went out of concept, that figure of nitrogen removal would be false because it needs to be rerun through the model.
Sure.
That's where the majority of that cost actually comes through.
Yeah. So maybe it's worth considering things like the pathways which aren't.
And so just adding to Jeremy's comment, so the idea was that there were three concept plans that were presented to the committee, asking them to provide the feedback, so as to what the preferred model. So if you take, for example, you just said, oh, look, we won't make the change and take out that path. When you go to community consultation, the community won't know that because the path will still be shown and it will create even more confusion than we have now. So the idea is that the committee was supposed to ask to advise us which model they liked. Then that was going to come back to council. Council was potentially going to, they support that. The model that would be then advertised for public comment.
And in regards to consulting with the three other stakeholders or authorities, Department of Biodiversity and Department of Water, etc., is it the same that would occur prior to or after more broader public comment?
Prior to, because that has a big impact on where this concept goes.
So that's what I'm wondering, if there's to be further input and advice on changes, wouldn't it make sense to wait for that prior to asking consultants to make any further changes, whatever any of their comments?
Yes, that's what we're recommending officer that we have that workshop for.
Thanks. Councillor
Gage. Thank you, Your Worship. Can I just ask at this stage how much has been expended on this project, considering we haven't gone out to broad consultation at this stage? Do we have a rough estimation on how much it's...
This information on the actual record for the report?
Not overall.
Building surveyor. Okay, 616, development services. And then it's the notices of motion. Okay, thank you everybody.